With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, my name is Thomas Nygren. I write about Liverpool FC for a Swedish website called lfcsv.se.
Hi everyone, I'm Jamie Smith. I write about Burnley. I write the No Name Ever newsletter, and hopefully Burnley will be allowed to play a football match sometime soon, and then I'll be able to talk about it.
Hi everybody, I'm Steve McGookin, and I'm a Spurs fan based in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and I am formerly the past chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining me today, guys. Jamie, I feel like many people sympathize with your inability to currently play matches. Fortunately for Thomas and Steve and myself, we finally managed to watch a match of football, which was quite nice, though perhaps contentious, but we can get into that a little bit later. I do want to start off by talking about all of these crazy match suspensions. So last week, obviously the only big ones that had really happened thus far were Tottenham, Leicester's cases were mounting, and then by the time we recorded, Manchester United and Aston Villa had reported their own cases. Obviously things have gotten much worse since we recorded then. At the time it seemed like we were all leaning towards it being okay that matches were still being taken on a case-by-case basis rather than UEFA's do you have 13 players available to play, if so you're playing rule. But things very quickly are looking like we need kind of an umbrella solution. So I was just curious from your guys' perspective, is there a way to resolve some of these issues, especially the fact that a lot of these times fans are traveling to matches and then the matches are canceled, but the people have already taken all the risk of traveling?
Well, I have no idea what the best solution is at this stage, but it can't go on like it is now. I was supposed to be at Anfield last weekend traveling from Sweden, and to have the match cancelled a few hours before that game would have been horrible for me, of course. Now we couldn't dare to travel to England anyway, but to leave the decision to play until just a few hours before the game isn't fair on the fans, and it isn't fair on the players. Maybe the best thing right now is to have a break and see where this is going, because at least it will give the Premier League some time to work out the best way to solve these kinds of questions. If you look at the schedule coming up with games every other day after Christmas, it will be dangerous for the players if a team loses maybe 5 or 6 players to COVID for every game. There will be no chance to get a rest. We have a big squad, and many of the other teams at top of the table has got a big squad, but maybe if a team like Norwich, or you can see Leeds yesterday, if they lose a few players to COVID as well, they won't be able to field a team. At least they need to play the same squad every day. So we'll see many injuries before February if they don't do anything about the schedule. We could see today that we needed to play both Keita and Milner for 90 minutes, and they just recently came back from injuries. And we played on Tuesday against Leicester, and they are the only midfielders we have, so maybe they need to play that game as well if we don't want to play our youth squad. If it was up to me, I would prefer to have a break until maybe January so that the teams can regroup and get their players back. Of course, there is a risk that we get the same situation again when the league starts over, but I think it's at least it's worth a try because we can't have it like this. And maybe I've missed this somewhere, but I want to have it clear what it takes to postpone a game as well, because is it just that you have COVID in your team? Is it if you have 5 or 6 players missing through COVID? Or if you, as Leeds, for example, have 9 players injured, will it be enough to have 2 or 3 players with COVID on top of that? I don't want the league to be decided by who has most luck with not catching a serious illness at the wrong time. But today, Chelsea missed 5 players. We missed 4 players. City didn't miss a single one. And they were the only team at the top of the table who got 3 points. So I hope that Premier League's got something good up their sleeve tomorrow when the meeting is. But and finally, if I want to go to Anfield to watch a game, I need to be vaccinated. Perhaps it should be the same thing if you want to play a game at Anfield.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Thomas has said there. And I think the lack of clarity around, firstly, the rules, like what's it, why does the postponement happen? What's the line that when it's crossed means that the game doesn't happen? I think that's important. And what's been frustrating for me is, as a Burnley fan, we've had two matches in a row now postponed very short notice within 3 hours of kickoff. Is that, like Kev, you said at the opening, fans are travelling to these games in the hope and expectation that the match will be on, and then having to turn around or in getting to the stadium and finding that the game's not on. I personally think this is an unacceptable situation. What I've also found frustrating and confusing this week is the statement from the Premier League around the postponement of Aston Villa v Burnley on Saturday cited injuries in the Aston Villa squad. Now, I'm sorry, but injuries aren't relevant to this situation. If you have injured players, that's tough luck. That's nothing to do with COVID. And it seems like it was the same in midweek. Watford have a terrible injury list at the moment. They have a COVID outbreak as well. So coupled together, they've not been able to field a team is the argument. But I don't think the injuries should be taken into account. If you have injuries, everyone has injuries. I don't think that's relevant. And I think the point about vaccination is really important. Obviously, this is divisive, and some players will have valid reasons for not wanting to be vaccinated. But at this current time, if you're a footballer who hasn't been vaccinated, you're putting your teammates at risk. You're putting the families of your teammates at risk. I don't think that's fair. So I'm not sure how other sports have managed it. I think the NFL seems to be a bit clearer around the rules around COVID. Obviously, they've moved games in the past. They've had games postponed. But there seems to be more understanding of where everyone stands over there. But here at the minute, it just seems like the Premier League is making things up as they go along. I don't think that's acceptable. I think the problem with having the circuit breaker, as Thomas has suggested, and I think that seems to be the way that we're going, is that there's no guarantee that the situation is going to be better in 2 weeks or in 3 weeks or in 4 weeks. So I think once the season is paused, I think there's every chance that that's it for a couple of months. Obviously, next season, the schedule has been decided to an extent by having to fit the World Cup in. So I think everyone's kind of working backwards from next year's World Cup and having to get the break in for that. So I think it is difficult. I think the Premier League's in a tough spot. As a Burnley fan, I think it's really unfair that we have no positive tests, according to reports, and our game's being postponed when we're ready to play, we're prepared to play, and they're being called off at the last minute. I don't think that's fair. And I think teams like Leeds, who have the injuries but not the COVID cases, because they apparently have very high vaccination rates, Leeds are now effectively being punished for their players being vaccinated. Because if their players weren't vaccinated, the chances were they would have COVID instead, and then the games will be off. So I think at the minute they've tried to keep the show on the road. I don't think it's sustainable the way it's going, but there isn't an easy answer. And that's the only conclusion you can really make at this time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what both of you have said. You've done a good job summing up the various dilemmas facing the Premier League as well. And Jamie's point, absolutely right about separating COVID from injuries, from the injury situation at the clubs. I think that's a really important thing to bear in mind. I mean, Kevin and I were planning to talk last week about the disruption to the fixture list, and I actually said I'd rather wait and come on when we had some football to talk about. But even like a game, even after a game like we saw today, I mean, we should have known that we'd inevitably be talking about the effect of Omicron, not just on sports, but a broader on how we function as a society. And once again, you know, it's in danger of becoming much bigger than just football. Apparently, the biggest issue is we're still unsure about the severity of this latest variant, and we'll really only know that when we have a sense of the hospitalization and death rates over the coming weeks. But I think, and we were talking about this earlier, I think we seem to be back to where we were a year ago, when there's a conflict between what we're pretending is normal and the warnings that we're hearing of the underlying threat. It's like when the government last year decided not to close the pubs, but just told us not to go to them. Right now we have a situation where they're telling us every day how serious this is, but at the same time, largely leaving it up to us to decide how best to protect ourselves. So that's just why, the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, declaring a major incident in the capital yesterday, and then 50,000 people gathering to watch a match today, just seems completely incongruous, to say the least. And I think for the Premier League, and I am sympathetic to the Premier League here, I mean, the problem has always been consistency and the fact that decisions, broader decisions, are inevitably political rather than purely scientific. But, the primary issue for the country has been the sheer speed of the spread of this variant. And therefore the problem for the Premier League is that its testing process at the clubs usually has a 24-hour lag time. So the situation at each club can change literally overnight. And that goes to your point, Jamie, about the timing of the cancellations of games and the need for fairness to fans as well as players. As we know, the Premier League is going to meet tomorrow to discuss a circuit breaker. But, I just think even 10 days or a couple of weeks break is still going to leave us in the same situation if there's no change to the players' testing regime. So, how do you address that? Do you move the players into a bubble situation? Plus, it only deepens the fixture backlog. And then what do you do about, do we want to move back to a situation where we're playing games behind closed doors? I don't think anybody really wants that. But it just means it's really hard to see what the logical next step is that ensures fairness and consistency, but also primarily puts the safety of the players, the staff, and the fans first. As well as, taking into account the logistics of how to stage live events where people are traveling from various parts of the country in order to gather there. And that's where the Premier League needs consistency most of all. And it needs to have a good message that it can get across to people where they understand the guidance.
Yeah, I think all of you have made some really good points, and I'm glad you guys mentioned this conversation could become terribly outdated terribly quickly, depending on what is decided at the Premier League meeting tomorrow. But as Jamie alluded to, it does sound like the circuit break is the route they're going. According to David Ornstein, it sounds like match week 20 is the week that is currently being targeted to try to interrupt play. But as you've all mentioned, the matches are coming so thick and fast that that's 3 days, and there are match weeks either side of that. So really, what impact is that going to have on the overall thing? And I totally realize that next year's football calendar is already dicey because of the World Cup. But, in case anybody's forgotten, that is supposed to be in the winter. So giving people a long break in the summer was meant to let them recover before having to do all of that. But there is, in theory, time in the summer to play some of these matches, to have like a more meaningful stoppage, like maybe what Thomas was saying, if we just waited till January. But of course, there are a lot of other aspects. Like Steve, you mentioned the political side of it. And obviously the tradition of, watching football over the holidays and on Boxing Day and all these things are pretty ingrained traditions societally. So are those things more important than these case-by-case basis per club? Obviously, those are all decisions being made by not us at this show, perhaps unfortunately.
Just to jump back in on that, yeah. I think already we've seen people just clearly trying to take advantage of the situation. It's like Steve said, it's like Groundhog Day, that we're back where we were a year ago or at the start of the pandemic. So we've got people like Eddie Howe, who clearly has a vested interest in having the season paused. Eddie Howe is about to get a gazillion pounds to spend in the transfer market. And Eddie Howe, incredibly, wants the season to be paused until the transfer market opens. Like, who could have seen that coming? It's exactly the same as last year when the West Hams of the world wanted a pause. or the season to be null and void because it was in their best interest. So I think we have to be very careful.
Yeah, they were in like fourth or something at the time.
Exactly. We need to be really careful about just judging what people are saying through their own bias and what suits them, because like, I have a lot of respect for Eddie Howe, obviously managed Burnley in the past, but I think he was completely out of order to call for a circuit break in a position where Newcastle would obviously be the primary beneficiaries if that was to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's an excellent point. This is why you can't make rule changes typically mid-season, is because inherently it will benefit some and be at the detriment of others. But yeah, I think the main thing that all of us have said is what we're currently doing is not working. So hopefully a more amenable solution will be presented tomorrow at that Premier League meeting. We'll find out. Hopefully we don't have to talk about this again next week. All right, we'll go from...
I don't think there's any chance we'll not be talking about it again next week.
you're probably right, very unfortunately. Steve, you mentioned wanting to come on and talk about the actual football, so let's do that a little bit. I think because of so many other dramatic situations happening in the Premier League right now, both on the pitch and off, a lot of people haven't really been talking about Leeds yet, but they just have 3 wins on the season. His name was never like brought up in those is ex-manager in danger kind of situations. Mm. But I just wanted to ask you guys, obviously they had such a great debut campaign last season. Why do you think things have gone so wrong for them in this one? And I will add as an asterisk, obviously they're missing their best striker and have done for most of the season.
Well, as you mentioned, Leeds have been very unlucky with injuries through the whole season. And since they don't have the biggest squad, it has hurt them a lot. Key players like Bamford, Ayling, Phillips, Cooper have missed many games. And this is a team that hasn't changed a lot since they were promoted. And now that the key players are lost, that is a big problem. And perhaps if another less stubborn manager than Bielsa would make changes in the way they play, when they lack the quality of the players, perhaps they should play in a different way. But he seemed to want it his way, and then they end up losing by 7 goals to Manchester City or conceding 4 against Arsenal. I think that they, in the end, will have a really hard fight against relegation, especially if they don't get their players back soon. When they don't have Phillips in midfield, they look like a completely different team. And I watched the game against Arsenal the other day, and it could have been more than 4 goals at the back. Perhaps it's a bit lucky for them now that they play the teams that they probably wouldn't beat anyway, because they played City, they play Arsenal, and they play us next. So they might have the best players back when it's time to face the other relegation opponents, but they are in big trouble. I don't think that it's the right way to go to sack Bielsa. Maybe short term, they can choose a guy like Steve Bruce or someone like him to save them from relegation. But by doing that, I think they will be in the same situation next season. If they can stay up with Bielsa and maybe give him a few more players, they have a chance to get back mid-table next season. And I think that the key thing here is that they can get a few more players back. And if they still don't win games, maybe they can change manager maybe in March or February or something like that, because it's not the same Leeds as we saw last season. And at least they can have Bamford back up front, so that they have a striker who can score goals. It will be a lot easier for them to maybe get a few more points. But the way they played against City and Arsenal was, of course, not very fun to watch. And hopefully they are as bad as they were those games when they play us next. But come January, they can maybe they should start thinking about winning a few more games.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Leeds on January 2nd. As things stand, if we're allowed to play football by then, fingers crossed. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping that they're still bad by then. I think everything that you say about Leeds, you have to first give the caveat that the injuries are particularly bad. But I think the flip side of that is Bielsa always likes to work with a smaller squad. Right, that's his preference. Mm. That's his choice to an extent.
With so when injuries football.
Happen, sure. So injuries are perhaps more likely to happen with Leeds, partly because they've got the smaller squad, partly because of the style of football that they play. So to then say, I want the small squad, but then complain about the injuries, I don't know if that completely tallies up. obviously it's particularly bad luck that the best defender, midfielder, striker are all out at the same time. That can happen. I'm not sure Bamford had started the season particularly well when he was playing anyway. So I don't know if Bamford coming back is going to be like this fix that just makes Leeds work again. Obviously, he's very important to them, but I think there was already a bit of like second season syndrome. Like we saw Sheffield United last season really struggled after being really good for the first year. I think historically as well, this Leeds team really struggle when Calvin Phillips isn't available. So it's not just this little spell when Phillips has been out. When he wasn't available in the Championship last year, not last year, the year before, and in the Premier League last year, the games where Phillips isn't playing, historically Leeds don't play well. The whole team is built around Calvin Phillips. When he isn't playing, Leeds look bad. Like Thomas said, I saw the Arsenal game and he's absolutely right. 4-0 was flattering to Leeds, if anything. 4-1 in the end. They got the penalty bad, didn't they?
Yeah, the Rafinha.
But it could have been the same as City. It could have been 6-7. And Arsenal aren't even that good. Like, they made Arsenal look incredible. Yeah. So I think there are big worries for Leeds. I think one of the problems is that Bielsa is so stubborn. Like, they want to play the same all the time. But like I say, the team functions when Calvin Phillips is in midfield. When he's not, I think they need to consider a different way of playing. Whether that means being a bit more pragmatic and leaving aside the whole man-to-man marking thing where you're following people around the pitch and leaving big gaps. Maybe that doesn't work if Phillips isn't there. Maybe if you don't have Bamford up front to hold the ball up, you need to consider a different way of attacking. It's difficult because they are so patched up at the minute, but I think there are valid questions to be asked about Bielsa in all of this. I think another thing is that it's Bielsa's fourth season at Leeds, I think, and it's basically uncharted territory. He doesn't often stay at a club this long. So whether we've seen Bielsa go through this kind of bad period, be able to come out the other side, I think that's going to be really interesting. When things tend to go bad for Bielsa at clubs, they just keep going badly wrong. I don't think there is an example of a club where he's really turned it around when he's had this sort of sticky spell. So they're really in uncharted territory. Leeds is obviously a really big club. The fans love Bielsa for what he's done at the club, but I think they're in a really tough spot right now. And obviously, as a fan of a club around Leeds in the table, I kind of have to hope it continues for them.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same, actually. A couple of weeks ago, it was like, Leeds can at least be thankful that their team's at least as bad as they are sort of surrounding them. But I think you're right. I think there is something more fundamentally wrong there. And I think what this shows is just how important it is to be able to put together a 2-3-4 game run. And the damage that can be done from a series of bad performances that basically compound each other. I think Thomas mentioned that they were unlucky, I think, to come up against Arsenal and City, who were playing really well at the time. But I think there is something fundamentally at odds with where they were last season. And how they can possibly turn it around. Obviously, yes, you've mentioned the fact that they're missing some of their key players. Phillips is the key one, I think, rather than Bamford. And you made that point, which is actually very important. And also, Bielsa likes to bring through the younger players into a squad that isn't really that big to begin with. So, and the interesting thing is also the supporters haven't turned on Bielsa yet. And I'm not sure what it would actually take for them to lose confidence in him. Mm. But it is a tricky situation for them, because also if you look at, I think their goal difference at the moment, apart from Newcastle and Norwich, their goal difference is the worst of everybody. Well, from sort of Brighton downwards, really Brighton or Everton downwards. And so they need to be able to turn that around. Plus, they've, with the disruption to the fixture program, they played a couple of extra games than some of the other clubs around them. So yeah, the next couple of games for them are going to be a real challenge. Um, but it is going to be interesting to see what happens with Bielsa. He's always interesting, as Guillaume Balague would point out.
Yeah, and I always find it interesting when we talk about like the things like the small squad, the high intensity, just because you see those things, at least when he was at Tottenham, so clearly in what Pochettino was doing. And so it's just interesting seeing all these issues just at a different club. But yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting one. Are we all thinking that they'll meaningfully be in the relegation fight throughout the season?
I think if they don't win at least one of their next two games, I think the momentum will keep sucking them downwards.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, they've got us the game after next, and if their big players aren't back, we've had a month off because we're not allowed to play football matches. So you'd think we're going to be fresher, have a stronger 11 compared to our squad. So I think that's a huge game for both clubs. We have to go to that Leeds game with everything. For getting a result at the moment.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. All right, we will take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, and we are back. Thomas, I managed to avoid it in the opening, but now I guess we need to address it. Obviously, there was a football match. Hooray! That part's very exciting between the Tottenham Hotspur and Liverpool. A lot of contention surrounding this one, so we'll just start off with an easy one. What was your view of this match?
Well, it was fun to watch the game if you look at it. Just a spectator, but it was, of course there was a few decisions from the referee that let's just say that I was annoyed by them. I talked to a friend before the game and I said that I would be satisfied with a draw in this game, because when you look at the midfield that we started, it was Tyler Morton, who hasn't started in the Premier League before, and we had Keita and Milner, who had just come back from injuries. So it was a difficult game for us beforehand. And as Klopp said, he didn't have an idea what kind of Spurs he was going to play, because you haven't played in a while. So it was hard to know what to expect from this game. But when you scored first and then you almost scored maybe one or two goals after that as well, I thought that this was going to be a very difficult afternoon for us. But then when Jota took us back into the game, it felt like it was going our way. So I don't know what to say about the football-wise, because the only thing that comes up to my mind when I think about the game is the Harry Kane tackle against Robertson, and it's the Jota penalty. And there are so many decisions from the referee that blocks my mind when it comes to the football match. But the one thing that we lacked when it comes to the way we played, it was Fabinho in the midfield, because... We let Spurs play the balls behind our defense maybe 6-8 times, and we were lucky that not concede more goals. I think it's the first time that you can say that our goalie, who maybe created your second goal, was our best player, because he saved us 2 or 3 times with terrific saves. So it was a strange game to watch, and maybe looking back to it, it felt like a proper football game, because I was mad, I was happy, I was angry during 90 minutes. And it wasn't a calm game in 2 or 3 minutes, because we started to almost score in the first attack by Andy Robertson, and then it just started to happen things until 96th minute. So I think the neutral spectators love this game. And most of it I like as well, but I can't, looking back at it, I can't understand how Harry Kane was on the field for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'm glad that you were able to address some of the football because the discourse on Twitter was maybe a bit more myopic than that. Just to dive in a little bit deeper on that, like I said, people were very, very mad. I know there's always been this kind of, maybe the polite word would be rivalry between Liverpool fans and Tottenham fans regarding Harry Kane, especially after that year when the two of them were going up against it for the Golden Boot. But I just wanted to hone in on why you think people were so, so mad about this one. Does it have something to do with the fact that the last time you were this close to City in the title race, they just didn't drop any points? So it already feels like dropping 2 points is significant in the title race?
Yeah, they won't drop many points, and giving them 3 points, 3 points ahead of us now, and I think it'll be hard to get him back to them because we play them away, we play Chelsea away later this season, so we can't afford to drop many points. And if you look at it in a way, it's the Spurs away when we missed many players, so it shouldn't be a disaster to drop points. But the Premier League is very competitive, and the way City played, they won't drop many points. They lost, of course, they can lose a few games, but I feel that I'm going away with this now. I think we should have needed 3 points here, especially when we lead with two. I think we scored our second goal when you were at your best at the game, and then Alice gave you the second goal, and then there was an injury. There are so many things in this game that did really go our way. But I think it's strong to get 1 point because when games look like this, we tend to drop points and often lose because, like I said, in the midfield, we couldn't really get to you there. And you had many chances to finish the game when you were leading. So maybe I shouldn't be too upset by it. But I think that in the end, I fear that we've already dropped too many points in games like this to be ahead of City. But maybe I should be more sad about the draw against Brentford or when we dropped points against West Ham than in this game because, we can look at it in the other way because if we had played you this way last season when Harry Kane was scoring goals in a more frequent way, I think he could have scored 3 or 4 goals. Today he scored 1, but he missed a lot of good chances. So another year we could have lost this game.
Yeah, if it's any solace, it's worth noting that under the mighty Nuno Espirito Santo, City dropped 3 points at White Hart Lane or the new iteration of it. So if you look at that kind of like comparative table, you're a point up on them in this particular fixture. Obviously, another thing that I'm sure will kind of be buried with all of the other dramatics that happened in this match was that it was the first time Salah didn't score or assist since August. No shots on target for just the third time this season. I was just curious if you felt that was more on him or if you felt Tottenham did something in particular to kind of rein him in a bit.
Well, Salah had a very quiet game, and I'm surprised that he couldn't get around Sessegnon more than he did, but that's off to Spurs to stop the best attacking player in the world right now. And let's just say if the Leeds defend the way that they did again, he can compensate by scoring 5 or 6 against them on Boxing Day.
Yeah, I certainly didn't mean to imply that he might be on some kind of a non-scoring rut, considering I think he scored or assisted in 18 of the matches this season.
Nice, rubbish. He's rubbish.
Oh.
Overrated.
Good to know. Well then, Jamie, perfect time to chime up. Let's talk about Burnley a little bit. We've already talked about it at the start of the show that you've now had these two matches very postponed. You have several games in hand. It's kind of hard to read the table right now because so many different teams have played so many different matches in terms of their totals. But in theory, if you won your games in hand, you'd be pretty solidly mid-table regardless. What impact do you think that has, just knowing that you have all these opportunities to catch up with clubs that already have points tallies and those matches locked in?
I think it's an interesting situation. I think we'd probably rather be up the table with some more points on the board, but I think it's hard to tell. I think a lot will now depend on when those matches are rescheduled for. Obviously, the Spurs game was a bit different because it was because of the weather, and everyone on Twitter had a massive argument about undersoil heating because they don't understand what undersoil heating is for and they've never heard of snow. So like, that whole thing was just like a whole headache of a situation.
But that was our fault for bringing Maxwell Cornet into our fantasy sides, as we discussed.
Well, I don't think he's kicked a ball since I put him in my fantasy team, so I'm certainly willing to take share of responsibility. But I did take him out this week, so hopefully he's going to score hat-tricks for every game for the rest of the season. I think it's a tricky one. January's always busy, isn't it, because of the FA Cup, so you can't imagine the games are going to be in January. Cornet, everyone assumes, is going to be away at the Africa Cup of Nations, so if we play those games after January, when Cornet's back, maybe it suits us. I mean, it's difficult to try and second guess what's going to happen because at the moment we've got Cornet's half fit. The rest of the squad is basically fine. We haven't got COVID cases. So I think the worst case scenario for us would be the season pauses now when we have a squad that can compete. And then when everyone else gets their players back from COVID, I will start getting COVID. I think that would be a very Burnley way for the rest of the season to play out.
Yeah, it would be very non-fortuitous for that to occur for you. Obviously, as we said, the match didn't end up happening, but there were kind of whispers that Wood might have been about to be dropped and you were going to go with a J. Rodriguez Vidra front two. What were your thoughts on that? And do you think that that's a better pairing than Wood plus one of them?
No. I thought it was an absolutely terrible idea. I think it's really worrying, actually, for me that Chris Wood is getting the blame because the games that we've been losing and because the service to Wood has not been good enough. So to just lay it on the blame of the guy who's not getting the ball in the right areas is a real mistake for me, but it seems to be something that we've done consistently, just to blame Wood if things aren't going well. Now, I'm not saying Chris Wood's had a good season. He hasn't. He does tend to start seasons slowly, and I think there's various reasons for that, including the fact that there's a New Zealand international. He has international breaks every 2 weeks, it seems like, in the first half of the season. He does more travelling than most international. So I think this factors in. And like most strikers, he's streaky. He tends to score his goals in bundles, so the chances are when he gets one, he'll score a few in a row. But I think Burnley in the Premier League, since Wood arrived, it's been a team that's thrived when Wood plays well. So to take him out of the team, I think it's a huge risk. I think if it was to recalibrate what Burnley is about and try and be less direct and play more football and play on the ground more, the Rodriguez and Vidra pairing would then make sense. But we saw a couple of games recently, Dyche has taken Wood off and we've just continued to be direct, having taken off the guy that is suited to the direct football. So it is quite concerning for me. Obviously, Cornet has been a star this season and has scored a lot of goals, but the last few seasons, Chris Wood has been the goal scorer. We're not really seeing anyone else step up in terms of goal scoring. So for a team that's not scoring enough goals to take the goal scorer out, it doesn't really make sense for me when J. Rodriguez is on a terrible trot in terms of goal scoring. Matty Vidra, I like him, but he's not a goal scorer in any sense of the word in the Premier League. So I think it smacks to me of Dyche sort of running out of ideas and just desperately trying different things in the hope that something works. Chris Wood will be one of the last players that I would be dropping out of the team.
Yeah, it definitely seems an odd choice there. We ask you this maybe every other time you come on, but with the ownership and everything like that, with the idea that you might be missing Cornet, who's been, you know, one of the key, if not the key, factor in your attacking play, do you think there might be money to spend in January or that you might see Burnley pursue players in the winter window?
I would hope so. Obviously, any club down the bottom is probably going to look at adding to the squad. Newcastle being the obvious ones, everyone expects them to spend their way out of trouble. I think the Kone signing, in a way, papered over a few cracks. I think the fact Kone came in quite late in the summer window made a lot of people think that it was a good window for Burnley. For me, it was kind of par. It addressed a couple of the issues in the squad, but the players that came in, there's only really Kone who's improved the team. And I think we needed improvements to the team, not just bodies for the squad like Aaron Lennon or Wayne Hennessy, who were always going to be backups. So there are obvious weaknesses still in the 11, let alone the squad, that need to be addressed. Central midfield being an obvious one. I think, apart from Ashley Westwood, Burnley really struggling for quality in that area. So that would be a priority for me. You look at the fact that goals aren't really happening apart from Kone. You maybe think about a new striker, but I would personally stick with Westwood, who's a guy who scored 10 goals 4 years in a row, so he's clearly proven to an extent at this level. But it's difficult. Getting players to Burnley is always going to be more difficult than other clubs, maybe those in London who can afford bigger wages and more of a draw. No one's pretending that it's easy to get players to come to Burnley, but that's down to the owners to sell the club, to sell the project. It's down to Dash to persuade players that they want to come and play for him. So I think it's going to be interesting. I feel like the last window was a par at best, and really the jury's still out in terms of the new owners and what they can really bring to the table in terms of making a difference compared to what the old owners were able to do.
Gotcha. Well, good luck, because you're too good of a guest for Burnley to go down. So if you need to make some calls or something. Cool. Steve, we'll come to you to talk about Tottenham. So obviously the match was a bit inciting. And as I say, there's already been a bit of furor on the internet thus far. But from a footballing perspective, were you impressed by how Antonio Conte set up, considering that was the most XG we've had in a match this season?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I'm always dubious about games that are described as great for the neutral, because they're absolutely not for anybody that's involved in them. But you know, everything that I said earlier about, in all seriousness, about the Premier League having the option of perhaps playing with fans or without fans. You know, this was one of these games today that would have been half the game it was if it had been played behind closed doors. You know, the atmosphere sounded great, and that's what football's all about for everybody. It's just a matter of how do we do this? How do we do football in a way that is safe and takes into account the needs of the fans and the needs of the players and the staff? As for the game, you know, it was very, very much a what-if game for us. I was surprised that we had the chances that we did in the first half. We knew that Liverpool couldn't possibly be as open at the back in the second. So we definitely ended up ruining, you know, several missed opportunities in that first half. As for the contentious issues, I think what surprised me the most was that the ref actually sent Robertson off, knowing that he had, you know, missed the Kane challenge previously. I mean, he would have seen that at halftime. He would have seen the replay and he would have realized that he got that wrong. I mean, both challenges were red cards. There's no doubt about that. And the ref kind of had a chance to even it up with Robertson by just letting him stay on the pitch. But I think that what that points up is the issue with consistency on VAR. And that's definitely something the league is going to have to address, and how VAR is used. Same thing with the Jota and the Dele penalties. You know, meh. I've seen them given, I've seen them not. And the same thing with the Salahan ball. Again, all three incidents call into VAR into question. So there has to be a demonstration of consistency about how VAR is used and what the outcomes are. But at the end of the day, you know, I think neither team deserved to win today. So a draw is probably a fair outcome. On how Conte set us up, as you ask, I mean, the upside, I think we looked a little more organized than we had in previous games, if we can remember that far back. But that's a sign that Conte is getting a chance, I suppose, to work with the players a little bit more. But again, there are still those overall nagging questions about whether this group of players that he has inherited are actually good enough to challenge for spots that are much higher than where we are at the moment. And I think the jury is still out on that one. Today was encouraging, but it also threw up plenty of questions. I mean, on the downside, defensively, we're still shaky, especially from set pieces. But generally, we seemed a little bit more cohesive than we have been before. I'd heard it said that, you know, Spurs' plan was to get all their games postponed until Christian Romero was fit again. But I think even then, we couldn't stretch that out that far. Although it is interesting, Kev, I don't know if you saw, there was a rumor today that Conte wants to bring Arturo Vidal to the lane at the end of the season. So, yeah, I know. What is he, 72 years old or something at the moment? But that, I mean, the very fact that we're even having that conversation shows that Conte doesn't seem to be satisfied with his options. I thought Sanchez was okay today. I was really impressed, actually, with Ryan Sessegnon. I thought he did really well. Clearly, Reguilon isn't fully recovered from that. And I thought Ndombele did well also while he was on. But again, can he play for longer than 60 minutes? We're still not sure about that. And of course, you know, Dele tried hard as well. And one of the interesting things about Dele, using Dele today, especially with Højbjerg out, Conte had said earlier in the week that what he wants Harry to do is play as much more of an out-and-out striker, play, you know, in the opponent's box, rather than sort of chasing back into the midfield to create as well as try to finish. And so I think Conte tried to use Dele in that role, and that's a subsequent role, to try and replicate some of what Harry does when he chases back. I thought Sonny seemed to get a little bit lost today, but you know, overall, given what the players have been through recently, I thought today was a good test, and it's always a good test against Liverpool, because our projects essentially for a while kept in step when Pochettino was appointed and then Klopp was appointed the following season. The two projects were moving pretty much in tandem and then diverged pretty dramatically. But it's always a good marker for us to play against Liverpool, especially when they're in good form. And so that was the outcome of today.
Yeah, definitely some good shout outs there. And I think that's one of the reasons I was so frustrated that the discourse will so clearly be dominated by decisions, was there were a lot of good individual performances on the Tottenham side. Somebody that I wanted to bring up was someone that I think a lot of Spurs fans have maybe buried on how much they want him to stay at the club over the past few months. But Harry Winks was terrific today at the base of the midfield, obviously replacing Højbjerg, who you mentioned. Skip was on the bench. And a lot of the criticisms he's gotten before is that he's not actually good at anything, that he's just kind of tidy. He just keeps the ball ticking over. But that is so crucial in Conte's system, where you just kind of repeat the same patterns of play. The movement is what opens up passing lanes, and all you have to do is complete them. Do you think Harry Winks can really find a bit of a career revival here under Conte and the way he plays?
I honestly don't know, especially if it comes down to him or Skip. I think Conte might, you know, prefer to give Skip more of his head. But, you know, Harry's a good central midfield player, and it would, I think, benefit any team outside of the top seven or eight. And unfortunately, that's pretty much where we find ourselves at the moment. And he would play regularly at any of the teams below us. He would get a regular starting job. I always sort of compare him on one particular aspect to Modric, but that's where the comparison ends. When he's able to break up play very handily, but then he gave the impression when he first broke through into the team that he had a telling ball, that he was able to sort of have that vision and sort of look. Obviously, when players like Son and Moura are running behind the defenders, that he could find them. that seems to have gone for now. Whether he can get it back, I'm not sure. But he's a hardworking player, and especially in Højbjerg's absence today, I was glad that we had him on the pitch.
Yeah, I will personally admit that I was pretty done with Winks. But that was a pretty good performance. And Thomas, I'd imagine that this might be one of those players where your impression of him might be that he's good, because it feels like he kind of turns up when we play against you, especially in that debut season that he had for us. But yeah, all in all, not too shabby from Tottenham today. We will head into Player Watch, where I wanted to ask you guys, with all the COVID stuff, with all of the injuries that are happening, and obviously the congested winter fixtures, TBD. Let's see if there is that break there for match week 30. I was just curious which players at your club might have a chance to really cement a starting spot now that they'll kind of have an opportunity to break through.
At Liverpool, I would have to start to say that the has cemented the starting spot in our league. Firmino has been out for a while, and when he's been out, Jota has scored a lot of goals, and he's started with both Mane and Salah. To me, he is a starting player, though I have a bit of Firmino, but it's hard to see how you can take Jota out of our starting 11 now. And after that, I think there are two spots in our starting 11 that might be up for grabs. And one is in the midfield next to Henderson and Fabinho, because to me and to Klopp, I think they would start every game when they're fit. And today, I think that Thiago is Klopp's go-to guy when everybody's fit. But I really liked what Naby Keita did again when he came on against Newcastle. It was didn't play just as good today against Spurs. But I really want to see him play more games, 90 minutes, now that he's fit. Because we know he's going away to the African Nationals in a few weeks' time. So until he leaves, I hope that we use him a lot. And now that Thiago is sick in COVID, I think we'll start a few more games and maybe fit for the rest of the season and be the player that we hoped that he would be when he is signed, when he come back from the championships. And the other spot is next to Van Dijk at the back. But Konaté is... maybe he's the closest one to getting in, but to me, he needs to outperform Joel Matip to be in our starting 11. And I think that Joel Matip maybe is one of the most underrated defenders in the league. To me, he's a world-class defender. And if it wasn't for the injuries, we would talk about him much higher than we do. So if he stays fit, I think that Konaté will have to keep playing in a game a month or in the cup games or so, because Van Dijk and Matip is our best pair at the back. So Konaté, Keita is the players who are closest to getting into our starting 11. But I think that today Thiago and Matip is a bit further up on Klopp in the status, because I think Thiago works very well with Fabinho. You could see against Newcastle when Fabinho was out, Thiago was he wasn't as good as he's been when Fabinho started. So hopefully when Thiago comes back to his then Henderson worked together with them in a good way. So let's see what happens. But I think that I think Jota is the starting player to me now, and perhaps Keita can take Thiago's place.
Yeah, for us, I think it's tricky for one, because it feels like years since we're able to play an actual football match. And I think I slated him earlier on in the show, which I already feel bad for. But probably is Matthew Vidra. With Kone set to go to the Africa Cup of Nations in the new year, assuming that goes ahead as planned, which the way things are at the moment is no guarantee. There will be a slot up front. Vidra hasn't ever looked like a reliable goal scorer in the Premier League, I think it's fair to say. But last season, he did form quite a handy partnership with Chris Wood. And that's what I would be leaning on. I would be looking for the pairings throughout the team that have been proven to work in the past. So in midfield, I think it's right that Jack Cook seems to have usurped Josh Brownell to play with Ashley Westwood. the Cork and Westwood pairing is proven to work. We qualified for Europe with Cork and Westwood in midfield. We know that that pairing works. I think that's correct that we've gone back to that. And I think in the absence of Cornet, Vidra and Wood is the pairing that makes the most sense. I think you asked me earlier about Rodriguez playing instead of Wood. I don't think Rodriguez has anything that Wood doesn't. I don't understand the logic behind that at all. Vidra is probably the quickest forward that we've got. If Cornet is going to be unavailable for a few weeks, we're going to need pace and attack. Vidra offers that. He will stretch teams in behind. He tends to have the ability to create something out of nothing or make a chance for himself. He doesn't always take them, but he has that sort of, I want to say, like X factor similar to Cornet, that he can just make something happen. And I think Burnley are in a situation now in the table where they're going to need individuals who can do that. If we're just relying on set pieces or second balls or bits and pieces, I think we're going to be relegated. So I think Vidra is the sort of player who can step up. He's one of a few who's out of contract to the end of the season, so he's not just playing for his future here, but elsewhere. He needs to impress if he's going to stay in the Premier League or get a new deal at Burnley. So I think Vidra is going to be probably a key player for not just the Christmas period, but for January if Cornet is away, and potentially for the rest of the season as well.
yeah, in terms of from a positive potential looking at the period ahead, I've already mentioned Ryan Sessegnon, and I think he has a real opportunity to break through into the first 11. But I think the focus is going to be more with the impending transfer window. I think the focus is going to be more really on players who have to prove that they're worth staying into the next phase of the project. And I think obviously the two that have been talked about the most are Dele and Tanguy Ndombele. And I think they, you know, both of them did a pretty good job today at actually trying to build a platform that they can work from. So I think from a positive potential, I think it's Sessegnon. Obviously, I think Reguilón, I don't think is 100% just yet. So there's the possibility of having Sessegnon substitute for him. But I think the crucial situation, I think, is going to be for Dele and Tanguy in terms of whether they see themselves or whether Conte sees them as an actual integral part of the team going forward. So yeah, there's upside and downside, unfortunately.
Gotcha. And then we'll wrap up quickly with match previews. First, a couple of EFL Cup matches. We'll start with you, Thomas, where you're going to be hosting Leicester.
Yeah, well, let's just see who is fit enough to play. I think we play on Tuesday, and it's only a few days away. So we had four players out of COVID, with COVID today, and Henderson was sick. So I think if nobody gets back, we'll see almost the same starting 11 as we had today, and perhaps a few new players at the back four. But I don't. It's hard to predict these games because I think that Klopp will try to rest as many players as he can ahead of this busy schedule coming up. Hopefully, Leicester will do the same, and it would be good. It would be nice to be in the semi-final, and we play at Anfield, so hopefully we can get a good result. It will be fun to see. Probably see Minamino start. We'll see Tsimikas play a bit more. We can see Nico Williams play. So it's fun to watch those games where you can see the players just not regular starters. I'm just sad that Divock Origi probably won't start because today as well. And these are the kind of games that he usually win for us. So it will be a tight game, but I think that in the end, Leicester will rest players and we will rest players, and we've got a bigger squad than they do. So hopefully we can beat them.
Yeah, I think a lot of those situations kind of stand the same, even as we talk about Tottenham here, Steve.
Yeah, no, same thing with our game against West Ham, Kevin. I think we're it's no longer their cup final, if you know what I mean. Every time we play them now, it gets tougher and tougher, and they're a good side, and I have to respect everything that Moyes has done there. I think this could go either way, this quarterfinal, and I think if we can keep Michael Antonio quiet, Again, it comes down to the holes that we have in our defense. Dyer and Sanchez, if they can get on top of Antonio and make sure he's not as effective as he has been recently, then I suspect that we might be able to do a job. I'm glad it's one of those games where you're glad you're playing at home rather than going on the road, especially midweek, and especially with the uncertainty surrounding all the games at the moment. With this might be the last chance that players get to have to play for a while. So yeah, it'll be a good game, and it could go either way. But and we'll see how West Ham do.
All right, and then we'll wrap up with you, Jamie, talking about this Burnley versus Everton match in the Premier League. Everton seem to be a random team every week. Which one do you think you'll get?
Yeah, well, I mean, is there any point doing this? We know the game's not going to happen, right? We're not like that at all, bro. Do I have to muster an opinion for a game that everyone knows isn't going to happen? Like, what's the point? We're just wasting time here, right? No, but seriously, I think parallels here. A few years ago, we played Everton on Boxing Day at home and had probably the low point of the entire Dyche era at Turf Moor. He's been at the club 9 years, and that was probably the worst we've been. I think we lost 5-1 at home, and that was a real turning point for that season. It looked like we might get relegated. After that, we changed the goalkeeper. We dropped Joe Hart, brought back Tom Heaton. Dwight McNeil got in the team. There you go, tick. Got the mentioning, even though it's not even relevant. So there's a sense that this is the time of year that's really got the potential to create a turning point for us. I think you're right about Everton. Like, sometimes they're impressive, sometimes they're terrible. Hopefully we'll get them on a bad day. I don't think Calvert-Lewin's back yet, which is good for us, because without him, they don't seem to have any sort of focal point in attack. I think it's an interesting one. Like, presumably we're going to be well rested, having not played for a long time. There's no COVID in the camp, apparently, so fingers crossed this is the turning point rather than another humiliation at Christmas that then becomes the turning point.
Yeah, no humiliations at Christmas seems generally to be a good strategy.
Yeah, let's keep that to personal life, right? The football can be different.
I think that makes sense. We'll wrap things up on that note. So if you guys would like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Well, thanks for listening. My name is Thomas Nygren. You can find me on Twitter at Thomas Nygren. I write about Liverpool for a website called lfcsv.se. Most of the content is in Swedish, but we have a few segments in English as well. I'm also a regular at the Total Liverpool podcast. It's a Swedish podcast as well. But if there are any Swedish listeners out there, maybe you can give it a try.
Yeah, my content is all in English, unfortunately. I write the No Name Ever newsletter when there's some football to write about. It goes out on Mondays by a Substack, and you can also get that through my Twitter feed, which is at Jamie Smith Sports, if you want more of my fire takes.
And thanks for having me on again, Kev. It was a really good conversation with the guys. Thank you. You can find me on Twitter at Steve McGookin, and some of my non-football writings at northernslant.com. But I have another exciting editorial project that I'm going to be starting in the new year, all being well. Just before I go, shout out this week, actually, to Christian Eriksen, who cancelled his contract with Inter Milan this week. And, you know, a wonderful player, wonderful human being, and someone we've never replaced at Tottenham in many ways. So it would be sad to contemplate the end of his career, but I'm glad he's still with us.
Yeah, and his agent says he's still looking to play somewhere. So we'll see. But yes, totally agree. Just glad that he made it through that really traumatic incident at the Euros. I'm Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. This is the EPL Roundtable. You can find it on Twitter at EPL Roundtable. If you're trying to find the EPL Roundtable, you can also search for EPL Roundtable on all of your podcasting things. I'm not going to say the words EPL Roundtable anymore today, I promise. Thanks so much to all of you for coming on. It was a pleasure as always. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.